Welcome to the Human Performance Podcast. Here we talk about everything to do with human performance and how leaders and organizations can get the best out of themselves and their people. I'm your host, Alex Young. My guest on the podcast this week is Lisa Erickson. Lisa is an energy worker specializing in women's energetics, sexual trauma healing, chakra manifestation, and Kundalini awakening. She's the author of Chakra Empowerment for Women and The Art and Science of Meditation, both published by Llewellyn Worldwide. She aids individuals through major life transits and trauma healing, with a particular focus on women's sexual trauma. Lisa is certified in mindfulness meditation instruction and trauma sensitivity, and is trained in a variety of Kundalini and energy healing modalities. We discuss the impact of meditation on human performance and how to get started with energy work to improve your own performance. Hey, Lisa, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today?
Great. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad to be here.
Well, I'm very excited to talk to you today because it's a topic that we're going to jump into that's very close to my heart. And I'm always very, very interested in anything to do with the mental side of human performance and particularly things like relaxation in the busy life that everyone leads at the moment. But before we sort of jump in with all my questions that are on the tip of my tongue, it'd be great to hand over to you to introduce yourself to our listeners.
Well, I'm Lisa Erickson, and I am an energy worker and a meditation instructor and an author of two books, Chakra Empowerment for Women and The Art and Science of Meditation. And I coach both in private sessions and in classes individuals on different ways to work with their mind, contemplative exercises, and energy exercises, which we can get more into that branch of meditation later on, to, among other things, maximize their performance, manage their stress, increase their self-healing capacity, and really also release old patterns that are holding them back, whether those are trauma-based. Quite a bit of my clients are sexual trauma survivors, or other kinds of emotional patterns that we develop over time that hold us back.
And for you personally, how did you find this as a career path? Is this something you always wanted to do, or is it something that you sort of were exploring, more and more as you found out about it?
Yeah, this is really the second career for me. My first career was like you in technology. Well, actually, no, you were a doctor first, right? So yeah, I actually came out of college and I was working in New York City. So this is well over 30 years ago, in the technology industry. And I was working it was a young technology industry, early 90s, working very long hours, lots of deadlines, and was experiencing what I later realized were stress symptoms, headaches and stomach aches. I was used to being very healthy. After medical doctors really couldn't diagnose it, someone finally said to me, which was somewhat unusual at the time, "I think this is stress-based," and recommended I try yoga or meditation, which was not that common yet. But I did find classes, and I'd been exposed to it a little bit in college before that. And it really had a dramatic effect. It really helped me, gave me tools in the moment to calm myself down. It helped me reset my stress point, sort of my average level, I would say, of my cortisol and adrenaline levels, so that when I did encounter a deadline or stressful situation, I was starting from a calmer place rather than already here and going up to here, right? And over time, that meditation practice morphed into more of a personal development and spiritual practice, and that led me into energy healing. So eventually in my mid-30s, I made a switch over to this career path. But initially, it did start out as a stress management, health-based inquiry for myself.
That's absolutely amazing, and I mean, we'll touch on the energy kind of aspect and the specific nature of that in a second. But for anybody listening who maybe they've heard about meditation or yoga, or they've seen apps like Calm or Headspace, which are now a little bit more widespread from when you sort of first encountered it. How would you kind of describe that to people, and what are some of the benefits that they could get if they're just sort of dipping their toes into it?
Yeah. Well, first thing I would like to say is there are so many different forms of meditation. So in terms of the style, if you will, that you engage in. There's a lot of options and it's really about finding what works for you. But what they all have in common is you're trying to still your mind and you're trying to practice creating some space between the thoughts and emotions that arise and your reaction to them. And you're practicing that for a few minutes a day. So, you know, in a quiet kind of formal way, so that when you're out in your day and something comes at you, you've practiced that. Just like you go to the gym to build your muscles up so that when you're playing your sport, you're conditioned for it, right? It's really, that's the way to think about it. You're practicing letting go of your thoughts as they arise, letting go of strong emotions when they arise, just letting them be, so that in your daily life, when something comes at you, you can stop and choose your response rather than react, right? So that is really what all meditation forms have in common. And the most basic form of meditation is just sitting down and sitting with your breath, right? Basic mindfulness meditation. In some traditions, you might practice counting your breaths, count to 10 over and over. In others, you might just focus on the rise and fall of your belly. This is the basics, right? The other kinds of meditation that I personally prefer are chakra meditation, where you're focusing on an energy center in your body. I like visualizations a lot of different kinds of visualizations. I like affirmations, where you are saying a statement that you really want to cultivate as true for yourself and then trying to sit in that feeling. I would classify all of these as different forms of meditation.
And I mentioned just at the top of the conversation that obviously everyone now, you know, particularly with things like remote working and changes in how, mm-hmm. you know, employees are kind of working together and interfacing, everyone mm-hmm. is sort of very busy. Certainly through 2020, there was huge amounts of stress in the workforce. How can people sort of start to integrate this in terms of their own daily routine? Because I suppose there's an element of making time for something in your busy schedule.
Yeah. Well, and you really can get the benefits of it by practicing as little as 5 minutes a day. Now, most medical research, when you're trying to get some of the medical benefits, like perhaps helping to monitor your blood pressure, things like that, a lot of the studies focus on the gold standard seems to have become 20 minutes a day, right? For at least 8 weeks. That's what they'll do in a study to measure before and after, right? And everyone will say, oh gosh, 20 minutes a day. How would I find 20 minutes a day, right? And you don't need to. You can start with that five, but I always like to put it out there, right? That the 20 minutes a day is very measured, across different research studies. But even 5 minutes a day can have a lot of benefits. And that's something that you could fit into your lunchtime, right? You could do that at your desk. You could do that in the bathroom if you're back in the office, right? You can turn off your computer and your phone for 5 minutes. What I will say is that if we draw on habit research, which maybe you've covered in your show, I don't know, some of the more recent habit research, if you want to develop any new habit, they tell you to stick with it for 6 to 12 weeks daily and try to create as much repetition as possible, meaning same time, same place, same length of time. So if it's going to be 5 minutes, really put it in your phone calendar with an alert. You know, it's going to be 8 a.m., 5 minutes every day in this corner of my house, right? On this cushion or this chair with this picture or this candle in front of me, something that starts to cue your mind. Oh, we're here. This is what we do when we're here at this time. And eventually that repetition will get written as a new neural pathway, right? That you'll automatically go there at 8 a.m. Initially, it's willpower, right? The interesting thing about habit research that from what I've read is if you miss one day, it's easily recoverable. You get to two, it goes like this, right? Which most of us experience, like if you've ever gone on a gym, you know, kind of anything like that. You realize you miss one day, you can bounce back. 2 days, you start going, I'll just call it a wash for this week, right? And then your chances of getting back on the horse slip. So you kind of want to give yourself a break once in a while on the one day. But on that second day, power through, right? And you know, the other aids that can help are some of these apps because they reward you, right? They give you little stars or stickers. And that may seem silly when we're an adult, but we actually get this little endorphin boost in our brain from that. And that helps create this reward cycle. So you want to use all of that sort of brain stuff to develop this new habit, and then eventually it will become automatic and you have this permanent positive habit in your life.
I think that's fantastic advice. And that sort of habit development is so important, as you say, for not just meditation, but literally for everything, whether you're sort of, you know, writing a book or mm-hmm. you know, just factoring that into your regular kind of daily routine. I mean, when we look at the effects of meditation and things like affirmations on emotions and particularly on performance. I mean, I know that from sort of performance coaching in sports and things like that, a lot of work is done mentally around reducing self-talk and getting athletes to be in the moment and relax so that they can perform at their best. How do you sort of you know, work with people to see some translational benefit into their, you know, normal lives?
Yeah. Well, for me, the most important thing is to do something that is somatically based, meaning you're feeling it in your body. So where I really start with a variety of different techniques is, what is it? What's the emotion? Or it could start with the thought that you're trying to get rid of. And if it's, I can't do this. Okay, we've got that in your head. Can you feel it somewhere in your body? And some people can, some people can't. Some people will be like, oh yeah, my stomach just goes into knots. Or yeah, my shoulders get really tight. Or I feel this, my breath constricting, right? Feel it in the body first. And then the first thing we try to do is reverse that somatic feeling. Oh, okay, your chest is tightening. Let's consciously relax it and take some deep breaths. Let's consciously do the somatic thing first. Now, say the affirmation that you want to say, I can do this, or I am doing this, or, you know, really whatever you want to do, you're visualizing yourself actually doing it, and focus on what that feels like in your body. So you're actually visualizing yourself doing it with confidence. What does that feel like in your body? And I try to get the person to really describe it. Right. Oh, it feels so easy. I'm just in this flow, because you're trying to imprint for yourself in your body this memory. And then that's what you're practicing. And this is honestly what a lot of meditations are. When you get into different energetic traditions, you're trying to practice a certain feeling so you feel more of it in your daily life. So that's the most important part of affirmations. Just repeating them in your head, I can do this, I can do this, I can do this, when your body is like this, going, no, I can't, no, I can't, no, I can't, has a limited impact, right? So for me, it's all about the body. And that's why I'm so fascinated by the concept of the energy body and energy work. Because emotions, they are chemicals. But to me, they're also energy that we feel. And when you work on that energy level, for some people, that really clicks.
Yeah, really interesting. I mean, I you know, sort of meditate routinely daily, and I've done yoga and things like that, but I've not done anything like, you know, chakra type meditation or energy meditation specifically. You know, for someone like myself who practices a certain type regularly, what are, you know, some of the main differences and benefits of things like energy work that you do?
Yeah. Well, you know, it resonates for some people and not for others. So I always like to say that there's so many different forms of meditation. So someone has to find what resonates for them. But the whole concept of energy work is really based on all of these many traditions all around the world that ascribe a subtle body or an energy anatomy, that we have an energy anatomy that intersects between our physical anatomy and, you could say, our soul, our spirit, our consciousness, whatever else you think we are, right? It's this intersecting point. And there's different mappings. The chakra mapping is one, and there's multiple chakra mappings around the world. The meridians is another. And something that people are not necessarily aware of is, you know, Chinese medicine, which includes acupuncture, which has become fairly common in the West, is in fact based on a subtle body mapping of the meridians. The meridians in the body that map to different organs and systems. Same with the chakra mapping. Yoga is based on chakra mappings. Really, yoga postures developed not just based on physical muscles and systems, but on our energy centers. Each physical yoga posture is also associated with opening or clearing different energy lines or chakras, centers in our body. And you don't have to believe in all that or know the mappings to engage in chakra meditation. You can simply select a center that you want to meditate on and use visuals, sound, affirmations, things like that to connect with that energy. And eventually what happens for most people is you actually start to feel that palpably and you start to feel the shift. So it becomes another tool for shifting yourself, that you begin to realize you have the power to actually shift your emotional state by activating the energy of a particular chakra.
And for anyone sort of sat at home listening or watching this, if they did want to, you know, start practicing, you know, particularly sort of energy work or chakra type meditation, what in your opinion is the best way to do it? Is this something where you need to have a coach like yourself? Is it something that people can kind of experiment with themselves at home? How do you sort of recommend people start to get into it?
For basic chakra meditation, you can absolutely experiment on your own. And just like the other forms of meditation, most of the meditation apps include some chakra meditation options. You know, there's many, many guided meditations out there. There's mine, right? Which at the end of the show, we'll do my website. I have some free meditations out there and also ones that are associated with my book. And there's many others doing that, right? Or a lot of yoga studios or meditation centers now also offer specifically chakra meditation classes. So there's a lot of different ways to explore it. And no, it isn't something that you need a coach to initially start out at all.
And for you yourself and your own journey, I mean, you obviously sort of specialize in a certain type of individual, which is women who've been through trauma, which is an amazing thing to help with and sort of, you know, unlock the consequences of that. Could you talk about, you know, how that came about and what sort of things you do to sort of help people with that?
Yeah. Yeah. And I would say that's about 60% of my practice. So I work with a lot of other things as well. And I do work with men as well and other kinds of trauma. Often sexual trauma intersects with other kinds of trauma that someone has experienced, especially if it's child abuse, right? There may have been other kinds of things. And so many people have experienced some form of trauma in their life. What we really found regarding trauma in general is that it is very much somatically stored, and that for most people, in terms of healing or moving forward, working somatically is very important. Because if someone is experiencing triggers, if there's certain experiences or situations in which they go into anxiety and it's actually linked to past trauma, consciously or unconsciously, the most effective way of addressing that is to learn to repattern the body in those moments. It needs to learn I'm safe. The message it's going to is I'm not safe. This is like a situation in the past where I was not safe. Even if to the rational mind, the situation is clearly safe, right? The body is saying it's not. So you have to work in the body. And in my mind, the energy body, because the energy body and the physical body are so closely mapped. So that's really what I do. And there's a lot of other somatic trauma healing techniques that someone can work with, but they are all closely linked to meditation. I mean, they are all about being able to stop, notice, what am I really feeling? And then be able to release it, whether that's through a breathing technique, a chakra technique, an affirmation. You're trying to repattern yourself. The way I work with it is that often you're doing that first is through a memory, not a memory of the traumatic events. I don't do much with that, but like you're in the grocery store and something happens that makes you freeze and you're like, I can't go. And you go into a panic type state, right? We'll work with that memory and rewrite it in retrospect that you took 3 breaths. You did calm down. We do that. And then you start trying to practice that in your daily life. In many cases, if I feel someone has what you might call trapped trauma in their body, we might use other things where we're trying to bring healing. Sometimes people really need self-forgiveness. Sometimes they need to let go of certain things. Sometimes they need to process their anger. And until that's done, they can't sort of reprogram their habitual responses. But that's really what we're trying to do with trauma. We're trying to repattern what's become an habitual response based on some part not feeling safe, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely amazing hearing you talk about it. And I'm really interested to understand, you know, if someone has been through, you know, a particular type of trauma, how, you know, just, you know, roughly anecdotally from your practice, how long does it take, you know, in terms of adopting and practicing you know, energy work or anything else that you employ for them to sort of see some of the benefits of it in terms of their own either anxiety levels or just getting over some of the blockers they're facing?
You know, it's really different for each individual, depending on the type of trauma and how they've processed it. Within the psychological community, the way trauma is often defined is as an unintegrated experience, right? It hasn't been integrated into your psyche in a way that you can manage it. So it's sort of unconsciously impacting you through these responses, right? So you're trying to integrate that trauma. How long that will take really depends on often, you know, how intense it was, how long ago it was, meaning a car accident last week that you're finding yourself jumping now all of the time, right? That we can probably get you through fairly quickly because you're addressing something that just happened last week, right? And it was a one-time event. Years and years of abuse when you were a child that you're now addressing 20 years down the road is going to take some time. Now, sometimes when someone comes to me, they've already done talk therapy, right? So they've already processed the narrative. So then in that case, we're really just working on repatterning the habitual responses with tools. And then you're going to see a result fairly quickly. I think once you hit on the right tool for someone, whether it's breath, or affirmations, or a particular chakra focus, right? Which, you know, can take a few weeks. You're going to see some immediate benefit from being able to engage with that tool in daily life pretty much right away. The issue is going to be, you're not going to be able to remember to use it that often, right? But whenever you do, you're usually going to see a benefit. The hard part is getting yourself to a place where you're going to be able to remember to use it, because the whole body goes into fight, flight, or freeze. And that isn't its first thought, isn't my tool, right? And that's the first step, is getting that to happen.
No, really interesting. And it goes back to what you were saying earlier, which is, you know, if you give people the tools, they can kind of proactively know how to sort of respond to some of these things when they happen, and hopefully sort of, you know, lessen some of the impact of those kind of like emotional spikes, ideally. I'd be really interested to, you know, go back into sort of, you know, your training and how you sort of learned this, and particularly like what do you think were some of the biggest experiences that you had in terms of different types of meditation or energy work that you yourself experienced where you just thought, this is incredible, you know, it's opened my mind, or it's done something fantastic?
Well, I think going all the way back to my 20s, when I initially just came to meditation for stress management, the fact that just this very basic mindfulness breathing technique, and then eventually a little bit of chakra meditation, helped dissolve my headaches and stomach aches was astounding to me, right? Was really astounding to me, and opened me up to this connection between mind and body that I just had not really considered. I think later on in my life, after the birth of my first child, which was 15 years into kind of my meditation journey, I was already in my mid-30s, I had a series of health challenges, right? I had a gallbladder attack, I had to have my gallbladder out, and then I got an infection in the hospital, and it was really, I had to go back in the hospital. Totally unusual for me. I'd been so healthy since that stress incident in my 20s, and I had such a good sort of healthy routine and lifestyle. I was shocked, right, that this occurred. And that really led me into my research in women's energetics and this kind of stuff. And I think the healing process that I went through after that was really dramatic as well, and really opened my eyes to the power of working with your mind and energy body in that way, the power of shift your thoughts. Yeah, a lot of different things. So that was very dramatic for me at the time, and is really what ended up leading to my shift in careers. At that point, it had been more of a hobby, a side interest. That made me really want to shift careers at that point.
And you mentioned earlier when you were, you know, going through that transition and becoming a teacher yourself, that you know, meditation or mindfulness was obviously not mainstream in any way. Has it been interesting for you to sort of see how that's sort of been adopted? And do you think there still needs to be a lot of sort of adoption in terms of corporate organizations or just individuals really integrating this into their daily routine, given sort of, you know, the world stress levels, as it were, at the moment?
Yeah. Well, I think basic mindfulness meditation, which is secular, right, and had the benefits of which have been proven over and over in medical settings, really should be the part of almost anyone's education, right? And it's to the benefit of any corporation to be offering this to their population. Now, what sometimes does concern me is there can be this attitude of, we can just stress everybody out and teach them mindfulness, which is not really... Right? Not really the goal. The goal is really to look at, you know, the environments that we are creating and all of the ways that, you know, what are we doing that creates stress? Can we change the underlying culture? Can we change the underlying schedule? I think COVID has created this whole rethinking of all of that in terms of people being able to work from home part-time, not have the stress of that commute, perhaps live wherever they like rather than having to base that on where they work. And so we'll see how that all shakes out over time. Obviously, COVID has also created a lot of stress, so I don't mean to say otherwise, but I think we do have a rethinking of workplace culture happening, and I hope this is a big part of it, mental health. And meditation, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was going to ask, you know, obviously with the pandemic and everything sort of moving remotely, did you find your own sort of practice was significantly affected in terms of being able to work sort of in person with people and how did you sort of handle that if it was?
You know, I was already doing a lot online because I wanted to be able to reach people not just locally, right? So to me, it was a slightly easier transition because I just went completely online. I will say, especially for trauma survivors, many of them feel that's a plus, meaning this is one of the obstacles sometimes to trauma survivors, especially abuse or sexual trauma survivors, pursuing treatment is the idea of being alone in a room with a total stranger is extremely intimidating, right? It doesn't feel appealing at all. So the idea that we could be on a phone call, on a Zoom call or Zoom audio, if someone doesn't feel comfortable with video, which is sometimes the case, is actually comforting and creates a doorway in. Now, in terms of meditation classes, there's pros and cons. You know, you with a meditation class, it's much easier to get to, right? You just walk to your bedroom. And so I've had larger groups than could make an in-person class. There is something missing in terms of that experience of meditating in a room with a group. You can replicate it to some extent online with different methods. But yeah, I miss that. And I'm still not back to full in-person meditation classes, but looking forward to that soon.
Well, I mean, hopefully it does get back in person soon, because I remember doing lots of meditation when I was out in California, just up the road from where you are, Redondo Beach in Los Angeles. And it was absolutely phenomenal and really sort of, you know, helped me in my sort of busy lifestyle, especially when I was flying all over the place back at the beginning of last year and really sort of, you know, kept me performing at a high level. For people who are, you know, really, really busy and particularly people who have sort of high paced jobs or who might be sort of flying around all the time, have you got any sort of like tips or tricks in terms of when they could sort of fit in their practice or whether you think having a coach really, really sort of helps those types of individuals?
Yeah, if you can have a coach, I think that's great when you have that kind of lifestyle. Otherwise, it is about that routine and within the changing time zones, which can be very challenging, finding that set time every day. What I found when I was traveling a lot at one point in my career and my meditation practice was already established is it was my anchor. It is actually what made that kind of lifestyle, that nomadic lifestyle possible, because it was where I grounded each day. It was the thing that was the same each day. You don't need anything but yourself to meditate. You know, I did have like a little favorite picture that I brought with me, and that became like my cue, right? That wherever I was, I could have that with me. So I think thinking of it as this daily anchor can be really helpful. I have meditated on planes. That is an interesting experience, especially energetically. There really is this sense of spaciousness. So that is something to try. That is something to try. It can be really interesting.
Well, I'm hoping the planes open back up soon, so I'll definitely do that again next time I'm flying over to the United States. I mean, for you, you've also done some amazing things like writing a book about, you know, some of your experiences and you know, specifically some of the bits we've been talking about. Can you sort of speak to how that kind of came about and what you were looking to sort of teach people in sort of book form?
Yeah. So my first book, Chakra Empowerment for Women, really was geared towards all the women that I work with regarding emotional, limiting emotional patterns. That includes from sexual trauma, sexual abuse, but not only that. And it's really trying to make chakra tools accessible to anyone. Someone who has not ever worked with the chakras, focused a lot on trying to feel safe in your body, releasing any shame, releasing any feminine conditioning, really, that is still so prevalent around feeling less than or feeling like you can't own your power, conditioning around people pleasing, speaking to be nice or liked rather than to express authentically what you need to say, right? And this is still really prevalent. I have two girls and a boy, right? And it is amazing to me to still see, even in sort of progressive Los Angeles, how prevalent this old gender conditioning is in the way that we talk to girls and boys about their emotions. It's not good for either side, because the message for young boys is, you know, is still don't cry. You're fine, right? On the soccer field when you fall down, right? And, which seems okay, but it's like you get that over and over and over. What is it saying to you about your emotions if you're getting no other message about them, right? So gender conditioning is a big sort of side interest of mine. And although it might seem separated from meditation and chakra work, to me, it's really linked, because it's about these unconscious conditioning that we receive that's just sitting there ruling the way we experience the world. Part of what you're doing in meditation is bringing that stuff into consciousness and selecting, you know, wait a minute, that's not how I want to be reacting to things. No, I want it to be this, right? So that's a big part of Chakra Empowerment for Women, is helping women work through that feminine conditioning through chakra tools. My other book is The Art and Science of Meditation, and that's a book my publisher asked me to do that is really for those who already meditate but are looking for more resources for how to kind of go deeper. So if you've been using an app on your own and you've been meditating and now it's like, well, what is spiritual meditation? Or what would it mean to go on a retreat? Or what would it mean to make my meditation longer? Or what are the stages of meditation? How should I interpret different experiences that I have? That's really what that book is about.
That's amazing. And just picking up on one of the points you mentioned with your first book there, I mean, with things like people's own projections of themselves and how they sort of see themselves in society, often, you know, a lot of the kind of human performance coaching that I might do, you know, for our team, for example, is mm-hmm. is trying to get people to kind of overcome self-limiting beliefs, which, you know, mm-hmm. for me, I might see externally as really, really silly. But, you know, if you know, particularly somewhere like Los Angeles, where it's a very sort of, you know, visual city, that there's lots of people who are in Hollywood, et cetera, et cetera. So things mm-hmm. like, you know, body appearance are incredibly, you know, superficially important to some people. How do you kind of, you know, deal with that and broach those situations through what you do?
Yeah. Yeah. I really ask people to think about where they're feeling obstructed. If people are seeking out a coach or class, it's often because they're experiencing a particular obstruction, right? Either their unhappiness in some way, or there's some goal that they can't achieve. So you really have to go, okay, what is it inwardly that is stopping you from taking the steps to reach that goal? And of course, there are often external hurdles as well, right? But we can't control that necessarily, but what we can do is control your reaction and response to those external hurdles, right? Do you receive them as feedback and rework your approach, or do you fall into hopelessness and despair, right? And usually if it's the latter, it's because of patterns of unworthiness or insecurity or undeserving, messages that you received as a child that you weren't good enough. Perhaps you were differently abled in the way that you learned in school. So you went all the way through school thinking, you know, I'm not smart. I can't figure things out. So then as an adult, you translate that into all sorts of other situations where it's really not relevant at all, right? And you don't even own the other kinds of skills that you might have. So we really go into, okay, when you're having that feeling, I'm not smart, I can't figure things out, where do you feel that in your body? And we work with trying to let it go, replace it with something else. We may give that a color, an energy that you actually are feeling in that part of your body and cultivating whenever you're starting to feel or think in that way. And again, it's all about that reprogramming. I work a lot with visualizing too, which I'm sure you do, especially in sports, right? It's like, you know, we have so much research around how beneficial visualizing doing something can be. And so often we'll be visualizing, well, what, visualize yourself not feeling this way, like just doing this thing with absolute ease. And what does that feel like? Because you're trying to really get your mind and body to log into that as a possibility. It's like you're planting this seed of where you're going.
Yeah. I mean, that was one of the things I was going to ask really, which is in terms of things like visualization, which exactly as you say, as we know from sports, are sort of so powerful. If someone sort of sat at home watching or listening to this, you know, sometimes it can seem a little bit, you know, out of your grasp if you just think, oh, I'm going to sit at home and I'm going to visualize myself, you know, winning or getting a job promotion or something like that. What do you think is the most effective way for people to sort of start that visualization experience?
So I think the most important thing is something that actually cultivates a feeling. And, you know, and they've discovered that, I think, even with sports visualizations, you have to be doing the visualization in such a way that the brain is firing certain things tied to certain muscles, right? Whether you're actually moving your muscles or not, for it to have the benefits, right? So I would say when you're trying to say visualize yourself having achieved a goal, there has to be a sense of being able to believe it, just kind of daydreaming in a way that feels escapist, maybe doesn't do so much. So I'm always trying to log into what's the feeling, right? And what to counter whatever the obstacle is. If you lack confidence, then we really want to come up with a visual and affirmations and perhaps a chakra technique as well that really makes you feel confident. And often I'm going to just ask, you know, do you have any memory of feeling confident doing anything? Describe it to me. Like, oh, wow, I'm a really great knitter. I'm a really good cook. I feel confident when I put a meal on the table. Well, then what does that feel like in your body? Like you know exactly what you're doing. What does this feel like? You use that then as a reference point for trying to bring that feeling of confidence into another setting, another visual. So when you're visualizing, just like with affirmations, they can be empty, you know, where you're just thinking them or just in your mind. To give them more juice, you want to focus on trying to create that feeling in your whole body. And the point of the visualizing is practicing that. And then you've got neurons firing. And it, from my perspective, energy shifts occurring that are helping you shift towards that new you, basically. The new is like software upgrades. From my old technology background, I'm always thinking in terms of software upgrades, right? We're going to 1.1 and 1.2. Eventually we hit you 2.0, you know, and then there's 2.1, 2.2. That's really what it's like. You're just upgrading.
That's amazing. Yeah. And again, you know, from your own sort of teaching and working with, you know, your clients, have you got any really sort of, you know, standout stories of where you've worked with someone that's completely sort of transformed their outlook?
I don't know. Recently, I was working with a woman who was 72. And I think in our culture, we have a lot of messages around aging and a lack of worth. You know, we don't associate, we only associate negative things with growing aging. And she definitely felt as if she didn't know if she could change certain feelings about herself. Her husband had died. She was very lonely. She wanted to make more friends, but she was living a very isolated life. She had so much insecurity. She didn't think that she could do that, but she did over time. And that was very gratifying to see. And it supports research, which shows neuroplasticity can happen at any age. We can change our patterns at any age. We can shift things. So if she can do it, anyone can, would be my answer, you know?
No, that's amazing. That's a great example as well. Like, again, why, you know, you shouldn't really be limited by anything, age or otherwise. And just kind of, you know, getting back to your, you know, your second book, and you know, being purely selfish for a second, for someone like me who does do meditation and has tried some different things, what are some things I might not have thought about that I might like to kind of try to you know, really sort of experiment more deeply with different types of relaxation, meditation, and different techniques?
Yeah. It really depends on what someone's goals are with meditation. So in that book, I do a very brief summary of the different kinds of meditation and the benefits associated with each, right? And like myself, someone may have come to meditation initially for stress management, but eventually it does become more about personal development or spirituality. And so in that sense, I'm introducing the other forms of meditation and how you might approach going deeper into all of them. I think what's also interesting for almost anyone who meditates is to read a bit about the stages of meditation as they're laid out in the two traditions that have developed them the most historically, which is Buddhism and Hinduism, right? The yoga traditions of Hinduism and the mindfulness meditation traditions of Buddhism. You know, there's a lot of writings on the different stages, different kinds of experiences, and a lot of people have those experiences spontaneously. So just understanding them within a framework, even if you don't adopt those traditions as your own, I think can be helpful. So that's another thing that I tried to do in the book. And many people have said that really helped them reframe experiences that they had had in a new way.
No, that's absolutely amazing. And for you in you know, your practice at the moment, do you find sort of doing one-to-one sessions sort of more rewarding, or do you prefer doing things like sort of groups and working with sort of larger groups of people on like things like retreats?
I love both of them, because one-on-one, when you're working with someone over time, you really get to see that change that occurs. But I love the energy of groups, right? And the way a group can really feed off each other and the participants can aid each other, right? And there's such an energy. So I love both. And at this point, I'm trying to balance both to the extent possible.
No, amazing. And you know, obviously when I was in sort of California, there's lots and lots of amazing places to kind of go in terms of meditation retreats or you know, just a lot of natural beauty around. What are some of your favorite places, you know, for anyone who might be going around California and looking to go on a kind of retreat?
Yeah. Well, obviously the beach is great. You know, and I am very much into element meditations, meaning the natural elements within energy systems. Each of the chakras, each of the energy centers are mapped to the elements, right? Like one is earth, one is water, one is fire, one is air. And so this is connecting to those particular elements. There's a lot of meditations you can do where you're focusing on that, right? So the water is healing. It's also fluidity. So it's like sitting at the beach and meditating on that repetitive sound of the surf, or gazing the ocean and the rise and fall, right? This actually creates in your own energy body this fluidity, which can be really helpful. Or say that you need grounding, you know, you could head up into the mountains and really meditate on that rock by some of the big boulders up there in the mountains that are just outside of Los Angeles, for example. The sun, you know, the ancient Egyptians used to just meditate on the sun as fire, and fire gazing, just even gazing a little candle, you know, but getting out there in the sunlight is great. And then forest bats. I don't know if you've heard about this in Japan. They're big into forest bats. Okay. So there's been studies done that have shown that walking in the woods, I think you have to do it for like an hour at least, creates this chemical response in our own bodies. We seem to respond to something that the trees emit, and it does actually create the relaxation response, you know, that meditation does as well, right? So in Japan, they really logged into this, and they had a whole campaign around forest baths, it's called. And if you Google forest baths, you'll find YouTube videos of just walking through the forest, right? So trees, we have a real symbiotic relationship to trees, right? They are generating the oxygen that we breathe and soaking up, you know, from us, the carbon dioxide. So we have this symbiotic relationship. And I think you really feel that, you know. So time out in nature, all these different kinds of nature, is a kind of meditation if you approach it contemplatively. And from an energy body perspective, each of the different environments can trigger a different energetic shift within yourself.
No, amazing. You're making me miss both Japan and California now.
Sorry. You have everything there. You have beach, you have woods, right?
That is true, but English people just love complaining about things.
And okay.
That is not that sunny.
I spent a year in England. We didn't get into that. I spent a year in college in England. Yeah, and I loved it. Yes, yeah, maybe sun, you're a little bit shy on sun, but the rest you've got in spades.
That's absolutely right. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to Lisa. And just to, before we, you know, start to wrap things up, I'd be really interested to learn, you know, who your own personal human performance hero is.
I know I couldn't pick one on this, so I'm sorry if that's copping out. I really just want to made me reflect on all of the individuals I've worked with who did experience intense trauma, particularly childhood abuse, that held them back, perhaps even resulted in addictive patterns earlier in their life. And they did the work to overcome that and to build a new life. And I just have such profound respect for every individual who I have seen do that.
No, that was an amazing example to wrap up with. And, you know, I think as well, I think on behalf of everyone listening, thank you for all the amazing work you do with those individuals, which is, you know, must be very rewarding to both them and to yourself, I'm sure. So just as we close out the podcast, if anyone does want to get in touch with yourself or pick up a copy of your books, where's the best place to go to connect with you?
Yeah, my books are available everywhere, Chakra Empowerment for Women and The Art and Science of Meditation. And you can also find me on chakraempowermentforwomen.com or enlightenedenergetics.com and on Facebook and Instagram at Chakra Empowerment or on Twitter as Mommy Mystic. And they're all connected to each other. So if you remember only one of those, you'll be able to find the others.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been absolutely amazing speaking with you. And I not only want to go out for a walk outside, but also to start practicing some energy work as well now in my own practice. So it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you, Alex. It's been a pleasure for me too. And thank you for inviting me and for bringing all this information that you're bringing through all of your conversations to more people.
Awesome. Thank you so much.